Morning, good evening.
Good afternoon.
Whatever it is. I think it's interesting to remember that we're all descendants of Tozan's teaching. And if it wasn't for Tozan and Ungan, we wouldn't even be here today. We'd be doing something else. I don't know what we'd be doing, but we would not be here. So we're indirect descendants of Tozan and Ungan and all the other ancestors. Of course, we're also descendants of Shakyamuni, but more directly from Tozan, because Tozan is the Soto school, of course, is the fountainhead of the Soto school. So, Dungshan and Sozan, Tozan. It's interesting, though, that the name of the school is the two Sozan and Tozan, but Ungan is the the school is descended from Ungan, but Ungan and Sozan actually worked together. They were Dharma brothers under Tozan. Does that make sense? You're getting the toes and toes mixed up. the descendant that is not the that we it was passed down the school of Tozan. So, Cao Dong in Chinese and So To in Japanese. You're behind the pillar, is that okay?
Yeah. Let's just see what my head's like.
I have a meditation chin rest if you want to.
Just a question as far as Sozan. At what point did his lineage die out?
I don't know. So I'm going to read from today from Cook, because that's where I have all my notes. This morning I read from Iman, but now I'm going to read from Cook. Ungo Dongo. And so I start where I started this morning. In Cook's page 181 in my book. But in Cook. But not in Cook is 181. Does anybody need any printout? Do you need a printout?
Sir?
Do you need a printout, Diane?
We're sharing.
Oh, okay. So the 39th ancestor was Great Master Yun Chu Hung Jiao. Dami, Jung Jiao. You usually call him Dao Yin in Chinese. Interesting. He stayed with Dongshan, studied with Dongshan, Dongshan asked him, "What is your name?" And the master replied, "Dao Ying." Dongshan said, "Say it from beyond." The master said, "If I speak from beyond, I can't say that I am Dao Ying." And Dongshan said, "What is this?" That is the same answer I gave when I was with Yun Yan. And as I said, when Yun Yan was Dongshan's main teacher, who he inherited the Dharma from. We have to remember that there are two aspects of the Dharma. One is the essence, and the other is the function. Now, if you studied Master Tozan's, Dongshan's teaching, we know that his five ranks teaching is about the essence and the function. His circular forms, the dark and the light, in various combinations, are about the essence and the function. Essential nature and the function of essential nature. So if you keep that in mind, you have a better understanding of what's going on here. So if he says, my name is Dao Yong, or, you know, Ungo Doyo in Japanese. We usually use the Japanese because we're more familiar with it. We know that that's the function. That's the function. And whatever name we have that's function. It's not essence. Although essence and function are not two different things, but we talk about essence and function. We have to talk about essence and function in order to go beyond essence and function. So, the third and ninth ancestor was Great Master Yun Chu Hong Zhao. He studied with Dongshan. Dongshan asked him, "What is your name?" And the master replied, "Dao Ying." It's funny, he says, "Oh, two different names here, but my name is Dao Ying." And Dongshan asked him, What is your name?" And the master replied, "Dao Ying." And Dongshan said, "Say it from beyond essence." Right? So when he said beyond, means beyond the function. What is it? And the master said, "If I speak from beyond, I can't say that I'm Dao Ying." And Dongshan said, "That's the same answer I gave to when I was with Yun Yan." Okay, so that's the case. So Tozan is identifying with Ungo Doyo.
So is he saying that here it says that it means sustainer of the way? And is he saying
that, well, we haven't got there yet.
No, it's
here. The
name has. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, they say that's what Dao Ying means.
Okay.
Sustainer of the way. So is the point here that as a function, you can say you sustain the way, but as an absolute, there's no sustaining or there's no.
Well, let's see what happens. Let's look at the circumstances in the case. I don't want to answer your questions too soon. That kind of question too soon. So, I'd like us to use the term essence instead of absolute in some other sense. I think because essence goes with function. They're kind of a pair, and they belong to each other in speaking. So the master, who is Ungo, I'm going to use the Japanese sometimes. I kind of go back and forth, but you kind of get used to Dao Ying is Ungo Doyo. He's the guy we're talking about. So master, you know, you get kind of mixed up here with master and teacher and stuff like that. So master is always referring to Ungo. But he's very kind to us because he uses Dongshan as Tozan and master as Ungo. So the master, Ungo, was from Wangtian in New Chao, and his family name was Wang. He made his own departure at Yanshu Temple in Fanyang while he was still young. He became a full monk when he was 24. His teacher had him study the books of the small vehicle. So here he says the Vinaya, right? But he did not like them, so he left and went traveling. When he arrived at Tsui Wei Monastery, he asked about the way for Master Tsui Wei. As it happened, a monk arrived from Yuchang, and he vividly recounted Dongshan's teaching. And in the end, the master went there. So he kind of convinced Ungo that he should go and visit Dongshan. So when he arrived, Dongshan asked him, "Where are you from?" So this is the circumstances of the case that we just read. And so the master, Ungo, answered, "I come from Tsui Wei." And Dongshan asked, "What does Tsui Wei say to his followers?" And the master said, "Tsui Wei was making an offering to the arhats." We did that today, right, in our Kwenko, with about 16 arhats and their followers, right? We actually made an offering to them today. So it's very much the same way. When you make an offering, it's like to invite. The purpose of incense is to invite Buddha or one of the Avalokiteshvara or whoever we're offering the incense to come and join our practice, or come and it's like a wonderful essence that some of us can't stand. flowers do the same, similar thing, right? So an offering, and it invites Buddha to come and join our practice. But what we're actually asking is for Buddha to come out from us and join our practice. Not to appear from some other place, but to invoke the spirit, right? So the master answered, "Where are you from?" And the master said, "Where am I? Oh yeah. Tsui Wei was making an offering to the arhats. And I asked, 'You are making offerings to the arhats, but do you think they will come and accept the offerings?'" Like an offering tray of fruit and stuff, right? And Tsui Wei asked, "What do you eat every day?" Dongshan said, "Did you really say that?" And the master said, "Yes." And Dongshan said, You didn't read that adept in vain." In other words, he had a good answer for you. Then he asked, "What is your name?" And so on, which brings us back to the case, right? So, what do you think he meant by "what do you eat every day"? What do you eat every day?
What sustains you?
And what sustains you? That's good. Also, what about you? He's kind of equating him with an arhat as well, right? You say, well, the arhats are not somebody out there, right? So, what he's being invited is not something out there, but what feeds you, yeah. Or What do you respond to? What do the arhats respond to? What do you respond to? So he's equating him with an arhat. Yeah.
I can't help but think that Keizan is thinking about the story of Tozan and Lungchuan.
Yes.
With the memorial service. And can you...
Can I remember?
Can you bring that up and see if it's just a coincidence or if there's actually some shared teaching?
Well, it is something like that. But I'm trying to remember it exactly, because Nanzen was doing a memorial service
for his teacher, and then
he was doing it for another teacher, and the emperor's son was his student. And he said, "How come so-and-so is your student and you're doing this memorial service for this other teacher?" And as if like he's making some kind of distinction. Nanzen gave him a slap. It's called slapping the emperor's son. But there's something else that goes in between there, and I'm trying to remember what that is.
Actually, the story I was thinking about was Tozan asked him, will he come?
Oh, okay, right. Tozan asked him, that's right. He was making an offering, and Tozan said, well, will he appear? When, right? The teacher said, he will appear when he has a companion. Right? He will appear when he has a companion. That's all I remember. But it's like, someone to appreciate him or something like that. He will appear when he has someone that he appreciates him.
So since everyone is present, he's talking about Tozan, are you present to appreciate this offering that we're making?
Well, you can see it as sharing the offering. I don't know if it's the same as if I should remember it exactly. I can't remember exactly your story, but it's something like that. But he will come when he has has a companion. That's the punchline of that story. When he has a companion, he will come. And meaning Tozan was his companion. Or if you try to explain it, it loses its edge. You kind of have to like get it, but when you start explaining it, it loses its edge.
Well, for me, it's kind of likened to we make a flower offering, an incense offering to invoke the spirits of Shakyamuni or Lokiteshvara, but who are they? And where are they? Is there a mysterious place outside? Or
right. Well, if you give this out, will they come? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When he has a companion, he will come. Yeah, it's like that. So, Dongchan asked, so Dongchan said, then he asked, what is your name? This is the end of the sentence, the paragraph. Then he asked, what is your name? And so on, which is back to the case. So then the master was awakened when he saw the Dong River, and he discussed it with Dongchan. And Dongshan said, thanks to you, my will was spread endlessly. Unfortunately, didn't say anything about the Dong River. But the Dong River must be the river that flows around the Dong Mountain. But the way I talked about it today, this morning, was that Neurons talks about it, I think is much better, because it kind of talks, the way he translates it is, the teaching will flow, and that kind of puts it in the context of the river, because rivers flow, right? So it's kind of like the river of Dongshan's teaching will flow through you, right? That's what the way I see it. And look at the Dong River, could be Dongshan, for all I know. So anyway, there's some meaning there that's kind of, I don't know, that's the way I see it. It's like the Master Dongshan's teaching will flow like a river through you. Thanks to you, my way will spread endlessly. So not only that, but once he asks the master, I hear that the great priest Su, now this is a little different, and I like this better than Diman's translation because it makes more sense. He once asked the master Su, great priest Su, who was born in Japan and became the emperor. Is that correct? And the master answered, if you're talking about great priest Su, he wouldn't become a Buddha, let alone an emperor. Dongshan thought that was correct. So that makes more sense. It's like he was born in Japan, but he became a teacher. He became a great priest, and there's a rumor that he became the emperor. And so Ongan said, you know, he wouldn't even become a Buddha, much less the emperor, right? Yeah.
So when the clouds have rolled in, would you like the blinds up or your lamp to see it over there and tell us something?
Well, I don't want to do that.
Neither.
If I need it, I'll do it. Okay. So, do you understand that?
It seems clear, but it's not clear what the point is of saying that.
Right.
And that comes out much more clearly in Nirman's.
Oh, yeah. What did he say?
Nirman says that the name, great master Shi, or Chinese is Su, that means discriminative thought.
Yeah.
And of course, discriminative thought is not the Buddha, and wasn't going to be a ruler over anyone,
Mm-hmm.
And Zen, you don't think much of discriminative thought generally, these guys.
Yes, well, so discriminating
thought. That makes sense.
The discriminating thought would, but it's much more pointed here because, he's not thinking of becoming a Buddha. I mean, much less, he's not thinking of becoming the emperor. He wouldn't even think of becoming the Buddha. Why would he think of becoming the emperor?
He wouldn't become a Buddha, let alone an emperor. Oh, that's as if an emperor would be better than a Buddha, which is
no.
Backwards.
No. In other words, he says, if you're talking about a great priest Su, he wouldn't become a Buddha, let alone an emperor.
Attainment.
Like not being attached to being,
Oh, okay.
That's the attachment.
So this is high praise for priest Su.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
That's very different from what I got from Nirman.
Yeah, it seems to make more logical sense.
Okay.
You can follow it more easily.
Okay.
So that's the non-discrimination. That's the point of the non-discrimination. To just say the non-discrimination, you kind of wonder about it. you know, Isabel is not striving for something. That's the point. He wouldn't become an emperor. You know, he wouldn't let himself do that. He wouldn't even let himself become a Buddha. A Buddha. Which is like...
So it sounds like, from what you're saying, that Nierman totally missed the point there.
Could be. I don't know who missed the point. One of them kind of missed the point, maybe. But I don't know which one. But this one just makes more sense to me. That's all. So, the master was awakened when he saw, here we are. One day, Dongshan asked, "Where have you been?" And the master said, "Out walking in the mountains." And Dongshan asked, "What mountain is fit to live on?" And the master replied, "What mountain is not fit to live on?" "In that case," said Dongshan, "you've taken over the entire country." That makes sense. The master said, "No, I haven't." And Dongshan said, "If that is so, have you found an entry path?" And the master said, "There is no path." Dongshan said, "If there is no path, how could you meet me?" And the master replied, "If there were a path, we would never have met." Dongshan said, "Hereafter, not 1,000, not even 10,000 people will be able to restrain him." Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sounds real different there, too.
Yeah, what did he say?
You know where you have it?
Yeah.
I'd have to look for it.
Go ahead. One day, Tosin asked Ungo where he had been, and Ungo answered that he had been walking upon a mountain. Tosin asked, "Was that mountain fit to live on?" Ungo said, "What mountain is not fit to live on?"
Yeah.
Tosin said, "If that is so, then everything within the whole land must have been tried out by the Acharya.
That means you.
Not so. Tosin said, Well then, you must have found the right roadway."
Yeah.
Ungo said, "There is no roadway." Tosin said, "If there is no roadway, how will you meet with me face to face?"
Yeah.
Ungo said, "If there were a roadway, then I would indeed break off my life with you and leave."
Yeah. That's the big difference.
What's the difference?
The last one.
What did you say?
"If there was a roadway, then I would break off my life with you and leave." And I took that to mean that that he's kind of like trapped. He's kind of like, he's with his teacher there because he has to be. There's no road. We're here face to face. If there was some linear way of going somewhere, I would have gone.
So there, it Niman said, "We've already met. And then how do I escape?"
"By way of any roadway, but there isn't one."
Well, here he says we would never have met, and there it implies that they did, that we met. It's pretty much the same thing. It's not. You know, it's just a different way of expression. But I think we think it's not radically different.
Okay.
I was thinking that, and maybe this is off, but that what he meant about a roadway was something that was already laid out, something that could already be found out some other way, and that if there was something like that, then he would do it, but that he has to be with Tosin face to face in order to actually learn that it's spontaneously happening.
Well, spontaneity is what it's about.
In
other words, if there was some path that was already planned out, I would never have followed that path. The only reason I'm here is because this is where I found myself. It's not like there was some way to have a sign that said go there. Right? It was like, here we are. I don't know how I got here. You know, it's like somehow circumstances played out, and here we are. And there was no, you know, road that says this is the way. So, yeah.
You're saying, is it pointing toward intuition?
Pointing to intuition. Yeah, that's right. It's like something you know without going through the path of thinking about it.
Let's also say if there were a roadway, there'd be no vitality.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Vitality would be very different. Life and leave you. It's like the real life is gone.
So, you know, this whole thing, I think, you know, what mountain is not fit to live on, right? And in that case, said Dumshan, you're taking over the entire country. I like that. You know, because there's no place that, every place is the right place. There's no place that is the wrong place. Every place is the right place. And the Master said,
not so.
Yeah. If that is so, have you found an entry path? Right? And the Master said, no, there is no path. Bhimsha said, if there is no path, how would you meet me? And the Master replied, if there were a path, we would never have met. I don't know if we can explain it. You know, you kind of know it, but if you explain it, then you're going to lose it at the edge. Yeah. So the Master was accompanying Dumshan, and as they were crossing a stream, Dumshan asked, "Is the water deep or shallow?" Now this is a trick question. You know that. And the Master answered, "It's not wet." And Dumshan said, "Coarse fellow." And the Master said, "How about you, teacher?" And Dumshan said, "Not dry." He told the Master, "Nanchuan," Dumshan said, okay. He told the Master, "Nanchuan," we call him Nanchen in Japanese, asked the monk what scripture he was reading. And the monk answered that it was the sutra on Maitreya's appearance in the world. Now you know who Maitreya is. Maitreya is the future Buddha who is sitting waiting to... He's the Messiah. Right? And he's waiting to come down and fix everything with his loving kindness. That's what Maitreya means. So he's the one who will come down and create loving kindness in the world. And so Nanchuan asked, this is not a different story. When will Maitreya appear? And the monk answered, right now he is in the celestial realm and he will appear in the future. You know, like the Tushi to heaven is the celestial realm. There are 32 heavens and there's no final heaven. But there are all these heavenly places and the Tushi to heaven is like the highest place, highest heaven. He will appear in the future, and Nanchuan said, there is no Maitreya either in the celestial realm or on earth. And the Master asked Dumshan, if there is no Maitreya either in the celestial realm or on earth, what does it really mean? Hearing this, Dumshan's seat quaked, and he said, Dao Yin, once when I was with Yunnan, my teacher, I asked a question and the heart quaked. Today I was asked a question and my whole body is dripping with sweat. So here, the student is making the teacher sweat and making his seat rock. So the teacher is actually rocking the seat, the student is actually rocking the seat of the teacher. That's the point, actually. There was no difference in the questions and answers between master and disciple. In the whole community, no one could stand shoulder to shoulder as an equal with Yunju. So, but this is an interesting question.
Yeah.
would know which we're at, either in teaching to heaven or on earth. Where is Maitreya? You have to be Maitreya. I'm sorry. Don't, you can't wait for Maitreya.
Well, aren't we on earth?
What?
Oh, aren't we on earth here?
Here in Maitreya.
Oh. That's between heaven and earth?
Yeah, this is between heaven and earth. This is a little bit big, but... there was a book, you know, some years ago called What Do We Do Until the Messiah Arrives? I always thought that was a great title. I didn't read the book. Who needs to read the book? It's a great title. So, this is Maitreya right here, you know. How do you bring love and kindness into the world and convert all the demons? That's your task. That's our task. So, when Maitreya arrives, we are Maitreya. And Maitreya is not going to arrive unless it's us. There's no 70 beings going to come down as Maitreya. It's already, Maitreya's already arrived a long time ago. It's just he has a hard time convincing people. Okay. So, later, the master built a hut, that's his ungo, built a hut on Mount Sanfeng. He did not come to the monastery for 10 days. Dongshan asked him, "Why don't you come here and eat these days?" And the master answered, "Every day a spirit brings offerings." Dongshan said, "I thought you were an enlightened man, but you still had these kinds of views. Come tonight and visit me." So that night, Yun Chu went and Dongshan called, "O hermit Dao Yin!" The master replied, and Dongshan said, "Without thinking of good and without thinking of evil, what is it?" This is exactly the same thing that the sixth ancestor said to Yun Ming. When that Dr. Ino, the sixth ancestor, was given the Dharma transmission in the middle of the night, the fifth ancestor rode him across the river, and in the middle of the night held up a lantern, gave him the Dharma transmission, and said, "You better get out of here, because there are a lot of people going to follow you, because they're jealous and they want to ruin the ball." I mean, you know, this is a great story. And so he went off, and he went up into the mountains, and 100 people monks were following him to get the Prabhupada ball from him. And so this one fellow, Hu Bin, who was a general, he had been a general in the army, but he was a monk. And the sixth Queen Nung put the robe and the bowl on a rock, and Hu Bin came up and Enon said, "Well, you know, if you want the robe and the bowl, they're just symbols of the transmission, but if you want them, you can have them." So Hu Bin tried to pick them up, but he couldn't do it. You know, they were too heavy. It's kind of like the sword in the rock, you know. They were not his. So he couldn't really pick them up for one reason or another. And then he said, "Well, I understand, you know, from now on, I think you're my teacher. I will ask you to be my teacher." And Hu Bin said, "Well, we're both the students of the fifth ancestor." So that was a good answer. And so Hu Bin asked him for the teaching, and he said, "Okay, well, sit down and cross your legs and think neither good nor evil. Just think neither good nor evil. So here, he says, I have to find it. Without thinking good or evil, without thinking evil, what is it? So it's the same answer. It's the same question that the fifth ancestor asked Hui Ming. Without thinking good or evil, what is it? That's a non-dualistic answer. Question. Without thinking good or evil, what is it? So the master returned to the hermitage and sat silently in Zazen. After this, the spirit came but couldn't see him. And after 3 days of this, the spirit left. So this is reminiscent of another story. I'm trying to remember who it was though. I think it was Amakijasvara or some. The spirits were raining flowers down on this, I can't remember who it was, but one of the ancestors. And that'll be come later. So once Rinchan asked the master, what are you doing? And the master said, I'm making bean paste. Dongshan asked, how much salt are you using? The master said, I added a little. And Dongshan asked, how does it taste? And the master said, it will do. I like that story. It doesn't sound like much, but it shows his independence. And it shows his non-attachment to recipes. it brings out his intuition and his independence. It's like Paul and I working in the kitchen. Another time, Dongshan asked him, if someone without Buddha nature commits the 5 unpardonable sins, how can he take care of his parents? This is very interesting. The 5 unpardonable sins, called the 5 deadly sins, killing a Buddha, killing an arhat, killing your parents, causing disturbance within the Sangha. These are unpardonable offenses. So, if someone without Buddha nature, right? So this is called Icchantika. Icchantika means someone that doesn't have Buddha nature. Now, when we read the sutra, it says all beings have Buddha nature, right? But there are still some schools of Buddhism that believe that there are people who don't have Buddha nature. And you can understand why. But the great Icchantika is called a Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva is called a great Icchantika, one who has no Buddha nature. And Dogen uses this as a koan. Great in his physical Buddha nature to illustrate the no Buddha nature is kind of like, does the dog have Buddha nature? No. But that's a koan. So no Buddha nature is also a koan for a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva has no Buddha nature. Mu Buddha nature. But also, you can say that the bodhisattva, because the bodhisattva doesn't postpones parinirvana, or, you know, and vows to be reborn into the world over and over again, he loses his opportunity to complete his Buddha nature, just to, you know. So he just remains in delusion. In other words, he vows to remain in the world of delusion. So that's called a great Ichantaka, one who has no Buddha nature. Stupidly vowing to remain in the world to save beings. And being the last to leave. Can somebody turn on the lights? That would help.
Maybe if we put the blinds first, natural light.
Yeah, the blinds would help too.
Yeah, it's very dark. The lights. But lights off.
Oh, that's good. Sorry, but you want dark glasses?
How's it over there? Is it okay?
Yeah,
is that
too much?
No, that's fine. That's not too much, is it?
I can live with this.
Okay. So did you get the one about the story about the one about the spirits, you know, feeding Unga? Did you have any question about what's that?
Of course. Yes. Why? How come when he's in meditation, thinking neither good nor evil, does a spirit not able to see him?
Yes, because he's disappeared. In other words, he doesn't. There's no.
His mind stopped.
Yeah, his dualistic mind stopped, so he couldn't be identified.
And demons come at you by way of your discursive thought.
That's right.
But these weren't demons; they were devas.
They were devas, but that's true.
Yeah. Same idea, though.
But same idea. Yeah.
They were bringing offerings, not temptations or...
That's, yeah, but offerings are also a kind of temptation, right? It's the other side of...
And it was demons. Ego food, you there.
It's the other side of the demons. It's like, you know, oh, gee, I must be really somebody, you know, they'll, you know, offer me. And this is thinking of the flower petals, you know. Oh, he's wonderful. And then you start thinking, oh, I'm really wonderful. I mean, I really deserve this. So that's just dangerous as giving in to the demons. Is giving it. As a matter of fact, pride is the worst, the most difficult thing to overcome. Because you're so good. It's very important in Soto Zen to not be too good. It's really important to not be too good. I remember when I had stopped smoking in 1973, and I used to visit Kobun Chino a lot, and when I would visit him sometimes, he would take out a couple of pipes, you know, and he would offer me a pipe to smoke, you know, and he would smoke a pipe. And it was kind of, you know, smoking pipes is really kind of camaraderie, you know. And I said, well, you know, like, I don't smoke, you know. And I don't know what he thought, but he said, you should not be too good. You know, you should not be too good a boy. You know, there should be something wrong with you. some kind of thing that you have that's not so good, and to keep you in line, you know, to keep you a little bit humble, you should have something wrong. So if you have something wrong with you,
it's okay.
I know you all do.
So do I.
Is that similar to what Suzuki talks about, having problems?
In what way?
Well, you know, you should be thankful for your problems.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's related, but different. We should be thankful for our problems because they give us something to do. They give us something to work with. Yeah. Yes. And not to solve them, not trying to solve them, just working with them is good. You know, just dealing with them is good. If you work on your problem to solve it, then you just get another problem, which may be even worse.
Well, what is working on a problem?
I don't know.
If smoking is not a problem.
Well, I didn't smoke, so that was a problem. I didn't take up his pipe, so that was a problem. Right? If I'd taken up his pipe, that would have been a problem. And the fact that I didn't take up his pipe was a kind of problem too. So I had to say, well, which problem am I going to deal with?
Shallow or deep? Shallow or deep?
Shallow or deep, yeah. Am I going to insult him by refusing his pipe? Or am I going to keep myself safe by not smoking? But he understood. But still, you know, whenever you make a choice, there's always a problem. So, there's nothing wrong with solving your problem. We do work to solve our problem, but we should realize that when we do solve our problem, that leaves you open for another problem. Because we just keep having one problem after another, no matter what we do. So we think we're going to finally solve the problem. And we make progress and so forth, but there's still always a problem. There's always, because, and I thought about this when I was quite young, that there's something within us that won't let us rest. You know? Even though we sit Zazen is like bringing everything to rest, in a way, to harmony. But still, there's always something that wants to pop out. You know, there's something that wants to keep moving in some direction. And we're always dealing with that thing. It's called our desire. It's always there. So, if we know that, you know, just dealing with our desire all the time is enough. We'll never solve the problem of desire. But we always have it to work with. That's what desire is like, vitality. It's what creates our vitality. And so how do we deal with the vitality that's created by desire? Because desire always wants something. Even the desire for Buddhahood. You know? And even if you attain pride becomes the biggest problem. So it's the hardest thing to work with because you're convinced that you're good and you don't want to admit that you have something bad. Admitting when you really think you're doing something so well and then to see that there's something bad, it's the hardest thing because you don't want to admit that, you know, because then you're a failure and you don't want to admit your failure. So the main thing in solving a problem is to admit that you're a failure, and then you're okay, a failure. To accept that is really important. And then You can work with whatever it is you have to work with. In other words, it's like practice is like, as Suzuki Roshi said, throwing a sieve into the ocean and watching it sink.
It's not like failure, I'm a bad person.
No, it's not
by fail. It's failure that there's always aspiration and intention.
Right. Yeah. He sometimes talked about an artist. You know, an artist who is so fussy and finicky about being perfect that because whatever he does is never as perfect as his ideal, he drives himself crazy and commits suicide. This is one of the problems in Japan about students. Students who do these have to pass these exams that are so difficult, and there's so much pressure to pass the exam. And you know, if a Japanese person doesn't speak English absolutely perfectly, they feel embarrassed. So to fail the exam, you know, is like excruciating for, you know, and they commit suicide all the time. So, you know, we have these challenges. And the great challenge for a Zen student is to be nobody. That's hard. That's really hard. Because we always want to be somebody. And that's why pride, you know, we Zen teachers get caught in this all the time. Because you have to know something. You know, if you're Zen teacher, you should know everything. This is expectation. And then you put yourself in a position where you can't back out without embarrassing yourself. And so you just keep putting your foot in, making yourself more and more grandiose. I really like David Chadwick's book, A Zen Failure. Very good. So it's much better to be a Zen failure than to be a success. Because actually that is success. But you shouldn't be proud of it. Oh, I'm more successful than you are. So we say pride leads to a fall, right? That's really true. So anyway, the Tay Show. Here we are with the five deadly sins of Nishantika. So, if someone without Buddha nature commits the five unpardonable sins, how can he take care of his parents? And the master said, he observes filial piety for the first time at that then. That's a koan. So, filial piety actually here means being self-reliant. The way you take care of your parents, taking care, I don't know, Tozan was terrible at taking care of his parents, I have to tell you. There's a story, famous story of Tozan, his mother. Tozan wouldn't see his mother. She wanted to see him, and he said, I cannot see you until I have until I really reach the zenith of practice. I'm just going to go out and be self-reliant. I won't rely on you. So he kind of abandoned his mother, and his mother kind of died at his doorstep, according to the story. So this is a great controversial story, you know. It's a controversial story, and it's a koan. Because you can say, well, you know what, one side says, well, you know, he's such a bad person, abandoning his mother, she died and divorced him, it's so awful, you know. And the other side is like, he made a vow, and he kept his vow. So, everybody has some kind of opinion on it. Most people think he's pretty bad. And it is pretty bad. It's terrible. But it's a kind of like it's like compassion and idealism. Kind of story of compassion and idealism. Yeah.
One of the first things I remember you teaching me and those present was someone asked about when someone wants your time, you know, how much time do you give them? People like nagging you for your time.
I know,
you said, well, you can have some of my time, but you can't have all of my time.
Yeah.
And to me, that feels like a middle way. If there's a mother or somebody that is needing our attention,
right,
that we should offer up some bit of us.
Well, yeah, I think Tozan should have, you know, said hi, Mom, you know, somehow or another, you know, and taking care of her. I think that's what he should have done. His idealism, he was very idealistic, you know. So I think this is the fault of, you know, idealism. The same thing happened when Dogen went to China. And he went to China with Myozen and some other monks. And one of the monks' teacher was dying. And he had a choice of, should he stay with his dying teacher, who wanted him to stay, or should he go to China? And, you know, so he decided that he would go to China. And so that was a similar kind of controversial decision. And only that person can answer it. You know, we can have our opinions about it, but only that person. It's their karma, their decision, you know. And no matter what our opinions are about it, it's up to that person to decide what they're doing. That's what I think. But, you know, should he stay with his dying teacher, or should he go to China? Staying with his teacher would have helped him develop his practice as well as going to China. But going to China in those days, it's not like, well, I'll take the next boat. It's like, you know, this is the opportunity to go with, you know, this group and probably never come again, or at least not for a long time, or maybe never, you know. So he made that decision. So maybe he was a great Ichantika, you know. So after this, Dongshan gave his approval and made him the head monk in the monastery. The master stayed at Sang Feng at first, but his teaching did not spread. But later, he established the Dharma on Mount Yunchu, and four groups of male, female monastics and lay people gathered in droves. So people came to see him there. After the master, you know, here's the Taisho, here's Keizan's commentary. After the master met Si Wei, that is, after Dogen met Si Wei, he studied with Dongshan and with the elder Dharma brother of Saoshan, in other words, Sozan. Through the above questions and answers, the doubts of master and disciple were completely settled. And Dongshan predicted, thanks to you, my Dharma will continue endlessly into the future. So his words were not meaningless, for his Dharma had been passed on generation after generation down to today. Truly, the waters of Mount Dong have flowed onward and continue to bubble and sparkle today. So do you remember he talked about the river about the Dong River, right? So this is alluding to that. Passed on in the school and has preserved the purity of Dongshan's teaching. Its source is not dried up even now, and it remains cool and clear. So when Ungo asked the question is, if there is no master, I'm sorry, if there is no, no Maitreya on earth or in heaven, what does the name mean? So when Yunju asked that question, he put the great functioning into motion. So the great function would be not just what does the name mean? The name, well, the great function, yeah. The name means loving kindness. So that's the great function. The great function of Maitreya. The essence of Maitreya is Buddha nature, and the function is loving kindness.
Well, it says his great function, isn't it referring to Unga?
Well, I think it's referring to Maitreya.
It seems to me that it would be referring to him as the, you know, his name meaning sustainer of the way.
Okay, yeah. When Ungo asked the question, he put his great function. That's right. So that's the great function. That's the function of Ungo. That's right. As a consequences, not only did Dongshan's seat rock, his whole body dripped in sweat, something that is rare now or in the past. However, since Ungo lived in a hut on San Fung and received food offerings from a spirit, Dongshan said, I thought you were an enlightened person, but you still have these kinds of views. That night he summoned Yunchu and called, O hermit, Dao Yun, and Yunchu answered, the one who answered was the one who should not take food from a spirit. To settle it, Dongshan said, without thinking good or without thinking evil, what is it? When you arrive in this realm fully and see it like this, spirits have no way to spread flowers, and demons and outsiders secretly seeking you cannot find you. On such an occasion, even the Buddhas and ancestors are resentful. So, it's like, I think when he went to sit Zazen, right? Saying, when you sit Zazen, nothing can touch you. Basically, that's what he's saying. Nothing can sway you, except your own mind, of course, which is the only thing that sways you anyway. But if you really, you know, right. So, when you arrive in this room fully and see it like this, spirits have no way to spread flowers, and demons and outsiders secretly seeking, you cannot find you. On such an occasion, even the Buddhas and ancestors are resentful. Even the eye of a Buddha cannot spy on you. When Yunchu experienced it in this way, he made bean paste and added just enough salt, self-reliant and sufficiently capable by himself. Therefore, he who lacks the Buddha nature kills his father, kills his mother, kills the Buddha, and kills patriarchs, committing the five unpardonable sins over and over. There is no thought at such a time of reverence toward parents. Trying to get Yunchu to be intimately aware of this realm, Dongshan asked, how can he care for his parents? And Yunchu replied, he cares for his parents for the first time at then. So Saoshan said the same thing. Do you get that? No. Keep thinking. Therefore, so it's about when you're self-reliant, that's when you're really caring for your parents. According to the legend, after Tosan, you won't like this, but after Tosan's mother died on his doorstep, he had a funeral for her and a service, and I don't know, kind of fixed it up that his mother ascended to the Tushita heaven or something like that. I mean, it doesn't sound like good compensation.
I mean, this is kind of like a cover up or something, or a rationalization.
Kind of a rationalization, yeah. Kind of like that. But if you have children, the best thing that they can do for you is be self-reliant and take care of themselves. That's what satisfies the parent. When the child, they see the child mature and being able to mature to this extent that they can take care of themselves and take care of others and so forth, that is more satisfying than what they do for themselves, or than the child doing for the parent directly. So if my child was doing something that was really wonderful in the world and wasn't paying much attention and not paying much attention to me, I would feel fine.
It's not the same in this situation as not paying much attention to. It's more
totally ignoring.
Yeah. And reject, well, not ignoring, it was rejecting. Actively rejecting.
Actively rejecting, in Tozan's case, yes.
Yeah. That feels different.
Yeah, that's
it's different for me.
It's different.
Like it.
Yeah. It would be nice if his mother had taken care of herself. But.
Good point.
But she needed him, as mothers do. It's really an interesting case, and it will be thought about by everybody that knows about it for a long, long time, and never really resolved.
Well, so before he really realized his independent spirit, was he then, was that the opposite extreme then, that he was going to commit the five heinous sins over and over again?
That's just a metaphor. It's not like he, you know, there's a saying, kill the Buddha. When you meet the Buddha, kill the Buddha. And people say, oh my God, you know, you're not supposed to do that. But it means kill. Kill the Buddha means you become a Buddha without relying on some other Buddha. Right? So independent means you don't need to rely on some other Buddha because you realize the Buddha within yourself. That's what that means. Kill the Buddha, kill the Arahant, kill your mother and father. It doesn't mean that literally. No.
You're supposed to do that, metaphorically.
Yeah, I mean, of course. But, yeah. It's an extreme expression. You know, it kind of brings you up to thinking about it. But not literally. So that's the great ijantaka, when you can... you commit the five deadly sins by becoming independent. You cut the umbilical cords. And then you respect all the Buddhas. And you pay homage to all the Buddhas and your parents and not all the, because you're independent. And you can do that. And you can even rely on them.
You can even rely on them after that, you said?
Yeah.
After he's become completely independent.
Yeah, because they're your friends.
Because they're as equals or as friends.
Yeah.
That's even explaining.
Yeah.
But that's believable.
Yeah. Yeah, because then they become your equals. That's what Dharma transmission is becoming equals. That's what it's about. Exactly. Become equal. Even if you don't feel equal. You do. Because the Dharma transmission ceremony is creating not a hierarchy and equality. The teacher is always the teacher. The student is always the student. But it's equal. There's equality. And that's why Dogen can say that any of the ancestors are the teachers of the Buddhas of the past, because it's all equal. So that's what independence means. It means you now independent, which means you're equal, and all the ancestors are your support and your friends. So we can't take any of this, you know, literally. As soon as you start taking any of this literally, you're lost. Even Dozan's mother, you know, you can't take it literally or you're lost. It has some meaning beyond the literal meaning. So, the Mutu, Uno, enters the ancestor's room as the top candidate for the transmission and receives the Dharma intact. Nongshan made a point of asking him, "What is your name?" In a meeting between master and disciple, you don't proceed on the basis of former circumstances. So Nongshan asked him, "What is your name?" You must realize that Nongshan knew the master's name, but he had a reason for asking like this. The master answered, "Dao Ying." Even if asked over and over in countless ways, it would still have to be Dao Ying. He made no excuses. Even though Dongshan did not deny such a notion, still, in order to get him to say whether or not he had the capacity to pass through barriers and escape limitations, he asked, "Say it from beyond," and the master already lacked the six senses and seven forms of consciousness. Okay. That's a good explanation, but I'll explain it. He kept saying, "What is your name?" Even though he said, "From beyond," he kept saying, "My name is Dao Ying." He didn't think, "My name is Buddha Nature" or something like that. He said, "My name is Dao Ying. My name is Ungo." In other words, he didn't get caught into Dozan's trap of thinking of some fancy name like Buddha Nature or Essence of Mind or something like that. He just said, "Dao Ying," which is the same thing as saying Essence of Mind. He didn't make a distinction between essence and function. So he used the function to express the essence, which we all have to do in our everyday life. Our practice is how you express, how you use the function to express the essence. It's very easy. Whenever you bow, that's the function that expresses the essence, because you let go of everything and simply make a pure act of expressing the function by bowing. We say, the Buddha, the teacher, raises his eyebrows up and down. That's expressing the essence through the function. He wiggles his ears. That's expressing the essence through the function. So the gateless gate, you know, it's like every activity is the gateway. Every act that you do, if you understand what practice is expressing the essence through the function. So we're thinking about functioning, but we don't think about essence. So that's dualistic activity. But the activity is the same, because whatever we do is expressing the function, but we don't always realize that the essence is what is the essence of the function. We think my thinking is the essence of the function. It is, but what is the essence of the thinking? So Buddha nature pervades the universe, and the functioning of the universe, you know, the whole universe is practicing shikantaza. Just this. It's not some special practice of Soto school. The whole universe is continuously practicing shikantaza. That's why we say that our practice is not something that we do for ourselves. It is something we do for ourselves, but ourself is the whole universe. So, what is your name? The master answers, Dao Ying. Even if asked over and over in countless ways, it would still have to be Dao Ying. You made no excuses. Even though Dongshan did not deny such a notion, still, in order to get him to say whether or not he had the capacity to pass through barriers and escape limitations, he asked, say it from beyond, say it from the essence. The master already lacked the six senses and the seven forms of consciousness. These are the eight levels of consciousness. To say he lacked them means that he went beyond them, beyond consciousness. Enlightenment is something beyond consciousness. He was like someone whose face was missing, or like a straw dog, so he said, or a wooden man, or a stone woman. So he said, if I say it from beyond, then I cannot say that I am Dao Ying. It is extremely difficult to reach this realm. If a student had not reached this realm, he lacks the power to proceed. He will still be confused by false views, because Yuchu, guarding this realm carefully, the two of them had this dialogue about the person utterly lacking the Buddha nature. So, utterly lacking the Buddha nature means total Buddha nature. So there was no violation of Dongshan's teaching. If you monks become fully aware in awakening, you will be true patro monks who have completely resolved the one great matter. And so here's the verse. What can I say today so that you will fully understand the story? So after a pause he said, never has it been bound to names and forms. How can you speak of it as beyond or relative? How can you speak of it as absolute or relative? Or essence and function? Because they're not two things. I think if someone else has name or form that has never, name or form it has never had. What transcendence or innocence is there to speak of? Immanence. Yeah. That would be Corey. I didn't use Corey's translation because we have enough translations and become more confusing. So that's the end of the story. And it's, 5 after 5, we have a little tea in and a little zazen.